The following paid program is sponsored by Prairie Fire Communications. Opinions expressed do not necessarily represent those of staff and management of WRMN Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Freedom Rings. I'm your host, Kenneth Jai. With me is my alternate excellent producer, Keith.
Now I'm an alternate. Yeah.
Well, I guess you are, because normally I have others. What is that term? Oh, forget it. I can't remember any terms anymore in my old age. Can't read, I can't fish, I can't even hardly tie a fishing knot, I discovered over this weekend. My eyes are so bad.
Really?
Although I did. I actually finally did, and I was canoeing the Kickapoo River in southwestern Wisconsin yesterday, which is a pretty popular canoe haunt, you know, and a trout stream. And the rental place that some of us rented canoes from said, oh, don't even bother fishing. There's just too many canoes around. I have to tell you, and I didn't fish that much, but I caught like about a 13-inch brown trout.
Really?
Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. And that's what I wanted to mention is Illinois libertarian friends, we did a road trip out to Tomah, Wisconsin this weekend, visiting a friend, a dear friend of all freedom-loving people and of Illinois libertarians, Ed Thompson, the brother of Tommy Thompson, the HEW or whatever it is, secretary, who used to be the governor of Wisconsin. Ed Thompson, Tommy's brother, is a libertarian. He actually ran for governor. He's been on our show once, actually. He ran for governor last time and got 12% of the vote. For a libertarian, it's pretty darn good. He's a great guy. And I tell you, it's his personality. He talks at people's level. He's not an intellectual snob or anything like that. He's just a normal guy who cares deeply, fervently, and emotionally for liberty. And he's got he lives out in Tomah, Wisconsin, has a restaurant called the TP Restaurant. If you ever go past there, check it out. He's got really good food. Well, it's a supper club, actually. The TP Supper Club. It's Wisconsin. And we had dinner Saturday night and brunch Sunday, and just visiting a great guy. He had a great time, and I'm telling you, and we canoed Sunday on the Kickapoo River, which is a little south, but maybe 20 minutes south of Tomah. And in the Kickapoo Valley in southwest Wisconsin, I tell you, that really is God's country. It is so gorgeous there. I don't need majestic mountains. I could live nestled on top of these beautiful hills in southwest Wisconsin and just be totally content. After canoeing, just driving through the hard routes, I did the length of the Kickapoo Valley, then I chose other little county routes through other valleys and spent probably another hour and a half driving, but it was worth it.
You called me an insert, but here's a little nostalgia for you, Kenneth, talking on this very subject. This is how long I've been doing this show with you, okay? I remember a certain canoe trip that you took.
the infamous Fox River canoe trip. That's still my favorite story to tell, but I'm not going to tell it today. So anyway, God's Country, Kickapoo River Valley, I'm telling you, just gorgeous. And a really beautiful trip, too. They call it the Wisconsin Little Girls of Wisconsin. It's not as much people or boats. All right, moving on. I have so much to talk about. Got the results of my seatbelt case last Wednesday in Judge Zopp's courtroom in Kennedy County. And he denied my motions to dismiss without comment, which I found a little interesting because he was making comments while the case was being presented. And I just found it a little curious that he did it without comment. So the next fight is for a jury trial without paying for a non-refundable $137.50 fee. Whether I win or lose, I won't do that, folks. I'm going to have a jury trial or maybe get, I don't know. thrown in jail for contempt, because I believe I have the right as an American citizen to a jury trial and not having to pay for a jury trial, as, by the way, a Supreme Court decision. There's too many beers in that canoe trip yesterday, Keith.
That's kind of funny, because I was actually talking with my better half about this thing with you over the weekend, and the thing that we can't seem to grasp collectively is, where does it say anywhere in the law books you're entitled to a jury trial only if you pay for it?
Well, of course it doesn't. The bill, well, I mean, they just passed these in the state legislature passed these unconstitutional laws. I'm sure there's some law that says that, but it runs contrary to the Constitution. You have a right to a jury trial, and this Pennsylvania, here it is, Murdoch versus Pennsylvania, Supreme Court case, still standing as far as I know, says that no person can be compelled to pay for the exercise of a constitutional right. Now, question is, I think what they're going to say is, oh, this is a misdemeanor case without jail, and it doesn't go under the parameters of jury rights or something. That's what they're going to try to argue.
It's a trial.
Exactly. Exactly. So this is going to be an interesting fight, and the thing is, if there is any semblance of justice in these state court systems, my trial still won't last for years, because I should be able to get what's called an interlocutory appeal. That's an appeal if he denies my right to jury trial without paying for it, because my case would become moot if they went ahead with a trial before it was adjudicated whether or not I have the right to a jury trial without paying for it. So that should be appealed before the trial. So this could last, and I'm going to take it as far as I can afford to take it.
You think they just dismiss it at this point?
Oh, I think now it's become butting heads kind of
really
thing. I got a feeling. So, that's the seatbelt deal. I may ain't through, the Americans quit when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor. It's not over until we say it's over. Are you with me? Okay, next important information. Oh, well, folks, federalism, so-called the experiment of federalism, is completely 100% totally dead. By 6-3 vote by the U.S. Supreme Court, they ruled that Congress has the right to regulate interstate commerce, even not as much to the effect of anybody growing one pot plant on their own property for medical marijuana use.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And the interesting thing is, and all liberals, I know there aren't that many statist liberals listening to the show. I wish there were, because they really, this should be a watershed event, a watershed Supreme Court decision for them, because the people who voted the majority to the most part, and the one who wrote the majority opinion, were the ones that are considered the leftist liberal justices, Justice John Paul Stevens, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Breyer, and Souter. All voted in the majority. They're considered from the left. Then, of course, the fascist Scalia joined them, and Sandra Day O'Connor. Kennedy joined them. Sandra Day O'Connor voted against it, along with Rehnquist and Thomas. Thomas and O'Connor, the only ones that vote in a general sense, in a libertarian fashion, I would say. And Rehnquist, since he had cancer, interesting. So O'Connor too. Maybe he knew something. He voted in favor of medical marijuana.
What do you think the backlash on this is?
Let me get to my point with the liberals. See, for these liberals on the Supreme Court, it was more important to regulate the economy, regulate your everything aspect of your life, actually, including the economy, because the interstate commerce has been defined since 1941. It was a Supreme Court case that they held, they let stand. And that was the case that was the one that would have been overturned, was that a subsistent wheat farmer back in 1941 didn't have the right to just grow wheat as much as he wanted, even though he wasn't selling it to anybody. The Supreme Court ruled that the U.S. government could regulate him growing that wheat because it affects interstate commerce, even though he wasn't selling it. Just the fact that he grew it and wasn't buying it, evidently, I don't know. They said it affected interstate commerce. So the liberals on the court had to rule that way, even though they would have liked to see medical marijuana. They couldn't because they knew that that whole regulatory structure of the Interstate Commerce Clause defined by the Supreme Court in 1941 would have toppled and would have moved us in the libertarian direction. So all you liberals who really are really strong on the medical marijuana issue, you really need to start thinking about where your friends are and where, in principle, your beliefs should be. Libertarian or the left. Libertarians were consistent. We're consistent about individual rights, and we believe in federalism. We believe that states should have the right to make their own medical marijuana laws.
Well, and that's the whole thing right there, is that, you know, what does a state like California do, or a state like Nevada?
They cannot, unless they want to take up arms against the feds coming in and really assert their state's rights. Then they're going to roll over and die.
But it doesn't matter. Hasn't Nevada already come out and said, we don't care what the federal government rules, we're going to allow medical marijuana?
We're allowed, but what if the feds come in with troops?
Right.
Arresting people. I mean, this really could, if the states wanted to really stand up for their states' rights, it could lead to
a civil war start.
Well, it should. I don't like the term civil because there's nothing civil about war. But in my opinion, it should. The Constitution is completely dead, folks. And Justice Thomas rightly wrote in his dissent that means that the government can regulate absolutely everything in your life if they can regulate this. It's all over, folks. It's all over. It's time for other measures, not violent ones yet. Okay. I think I've covered about what I want to cover, and my apologies to Jim Oberweis, who I believe is listening, who's going to be my guest today. I believe he is running for governor as a Republican, and I will have some interesting, pressing issues to discuss with Mr. Oberweis. So, the phone, and you are welcome also to call in and join us. 847-931-1410. That's 931-1410. We will be back after a few messages. Are you politically homeless? Are you tired of being taxed and regulated by the Democrats and regulated and taxed by the Republicans? Would you like to pursue your own dreams without the interference of government? Well then, America's most successful upcoming party, the Libertarian Party, is your political home. The Fox Valley Libertarian Party is your local libertarian group working hard to restore the freedoms our country once held dear. Yes, you can fight City Hall and win. We did. Find out how. With your help, we will make the 21st century the century of liberty for all. We hold monthly meetings at Baroni's Pizza, 3 Lakewood Plaza, 1 block west of Route 25 off of Bessinger Drive in Carpentersville on the last Wednesday of every month at 7 o'clock p.m. Call 847-426-1974 for more information. That's 847-426-1974. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty.
You get what you pay for. Efficient, high-quality service from Perfect Painting and Decorating. In business under the same name since 1975, Perfect Painting and Decorating supplies superior service for both interior and exterior painting, decorative finishing, wallpapering, plastering, drywall and taping, and wood refinishing. For your decorating needs, Perfect Painting and Decorating can custom tint right on the job site. Imagine no interruptions, thorough preparation, professional tradesmen, top-of-the-line materials, meticulous cleanup. Get the job done right the first time. It may cost a bit more for quality, but it's worth it. For a free estimate, call Perfect Painting and Decorating at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974. You'll be glad you did.
Hello, friends. This is Kenneth John, and Freedom Rings needs your help. I would like to get back to a two-hour show, but that costs money. You can help by contributing to the Heartland Institute, Illinois' own libertarian think tank, with a tax-deductible contribution. The Heartland Institute is an independent, nonprofit research organization in operation for 17 years. Joseph Bass, Heartland's president, is a frequent guest on this program. 90% of what you contribute to Heartland comes back to Freedom Ring to pay for this ad. By contributing $25 or more, you will receive monthly publications including school reform news, environment and climate news, and the Heartlander, the Heartland Institute's monthly newsletter. So please call 312-377-4000 to contribute, and be sure to mention Freedom Ring. That's 312-377-4000. Or you can contribute by credit card on the internet by going to Heartland's website at heartland.org. Again, remember to mention Freedom Ring, and thank you for your support.
And you may see tonight when an illegal smile is so all very much, but it lasts a long while. Won't you please tell the man I didn't kill anyone? No, I'm just trying to have me some fun. Well done, I know fun.
We are back with Freedom Rings. I'm Kenneth John. I'd like to introduce now to the program Jim Oberweis. How you doing, Jim?
Good morning. Doing great.
I apologize for the length of my opening comments. There are some things I just had to get off my chest. So I apologize for the lateness of this. And this is not your normal radio show if you haven't been listening in. So.
I understand.
At any rate, you're running for governor.
Yes, I am.
Why are you running?
Well, I'm in a very fortunate position that I have the time and the energy and the resources to do so, and I believe our state is in great need of some help and some change, not only our state, but our political party as well.
What kind of help, what kind of change?
Well, I am very concerned about the culture of corruption that has swept through politics in Illinois on both the Republican and Democratic side. I believe on the Republican side, it's history. I believe that it has occurred, but is not occurring today. But on the Democratic side, it is continuing blatantly, as anybody who's reading any newspapers, I think, is widely aware. And I think that has to end.
Just the Democrats? Well, as a Libertarian, I have to say, Jim, that I'm more aware of the Republican corruption. Of every time the Libertarian Party tries to get on the ballot, it seems like they use taxpayers' money, bureaucrats, to try to strike signatures away from us, at the taxpayers' expense. And the whole George Ryan thing was part of that, too.
Well, I agree. That's what I meant.
Okay, I thought you said Democrats. I'm sorry. I thought you said especially Democrats.
I said Democrats currently.
Currently.
What's going on in the Blagojevich administration.
Okay.
Today.
Okay.
I have pledged that if I am the next governor, we won't be handing out state jobs for campaign contributions. And I've also pledged that if I'm the next governor, I won't even accept contributions from those that have state service contracts with Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important. I think we need to take those steps to end this corruption that has been so rampant. Furthermore, I think we need redistricting reform. We have a redistricting coming up in 2010. I don't care whether the Republicans do it or the Democrats do it. It has tended to be basically an incumbent protection program. I believe that we ought to have an unbiased panel, perhaps of retired judges or even a computer program if it's truly unbiased.
No, but there's nothing unbiased, though. Equally, the computer program, they can program however they want.
That's true, but some states
can make it out of the bias and
provided a much less biased program than an incumbent protection program that is rampant in Illinois.
And I don't see, for retired judges, it seems to me they're as biased as they come.
Okay, let's rephrase it. From an unbiased panel.
If that's possible. I think it's a tough, that's always to me a really tough issue of appointed versus elective controlling things. Because
but it's clear that the worst thing we can possibly do is they have state legislators redistrict when they're designed only to protect themselves and protect their
mm-hmm.
districts.
Mm-hmm. No, you make a good point. It's just, I don't think there's any easy answers. My answer,
I've never said there are easy answers.
Yeah, I understand.
But we have to tackle them, even if they're tough answers. And I'm a guy who's taken on a lot of tough problems before and solved many of them.
How about here's a suggestion to get rid of the corruption. It would seem to me, if you get rid of the reason for people to fall into corruption. In other words,
money.
The largesse
money.
Of government, if we restored government to its original constitutional balance, both state and federal, it seems to me there would be no reason for people to having to bribe of the state officials to get their goodies, because the goodies would be declared unconstitutional.
Precisely what we're working towards.
Well, that's great. I'd love to hear that. I'd like to know how you can do that, because I don't even know the answer to that.
Well, to begin with, we need to get control of the budget process. Clearly, spending in Illinois is totally out of control. The state legislature has become addicted to greater spending, and I intend to be the outside intervention to begin to reduce that runaway spending that we have. I've also pledged to try to roll back some of the 280-plus new Blagojevich taxes and fees that have occurred in the last 2.5 or 3 years, and to not approve or go along with, or to veto, if I get that opportunity, any increases in taxes.
So I assume you're against this so-called property tax reform, these various bills that are...
Well, 755 is far from any type of property tax reform.
I know, that's why it's so-called.
It is merely an effort to gain more money from taxpayers to have the legislature spend, and it's absolutely the wrong thing. But Blagojevich administration has driven business out of Illinois. We need to make Illinois a friendly state, a state where companies want to locate, where they want to create jobs and opportunities for people and build businesses. A recent Forbes article ranked Illinois, I believe, was 47th out of 50 in terms of desirable places to locate a business. That's crazy. Illinois has got a great economy, a diversified economy. We've got a solid manufacturing base. We've got a good technology base. We've got wonderful universities, the University of Illinois in Champaign and also in Chicago and Carbondale and Edwardsville and Bloomington, DeKalb and so on, and institutions like Northwestern and the University of Chicago are great leading institutions, to say nothing of the fact that we have an outstanding Midwestern work culture in Illinois. So Illinois should be a leader in economic recovery that's been going on in this country, not a laggard. We've had a great recovery. If any of our listeners aren't aware of it, last year this country had a 4.1% productivity increase. That's the biggest increase in productivity in a generation in this country. We had record high manufacturing output in this country. We even had record high steel production, albeit at 75% fewer jobs than we had in the steel industry 25 years ago. Just much greater productivity. And we now have the most efficient steel production in the entire world. Fewer labor hours per ton of steel produced than any other country. In addition to that, we've had new jobs being created very rapidly. In February, 270,000 new jobs. In March, 150,000 more. And in April, about 270,000 additional jobs. May was a little less. It was only about 100,000. But the unemployment rate dropped even further to 5.1%, which is the lowest in almost 3 years. So things in this country are going very, very well, but not in Illinois.
Not in Illinois, and maybe only, in my opinion, economically. And I'm all in favor of growing business and becoming more prosperous, and I think that's a wonderful thing. And that's probably what most people are interested in. I, however, have a value system that rates prosperity a little bit below personal freedom. And there are some laws in this.
Those two tend to go hand in hand, by the way.
They do. You're absolutely right. They do. They absolutely do go hand in hand. But it seems to me that I will not personally enjoy any prosperity I may get if I'm going to be told every aspect of my life what I can and cannot do. And in this state, and I don't know how much you were listening before, but I've been fighting now for 2 years. It'll be 2 years July 7th that I got a seatbelt ticket in Algonquin. And I have vowed that I will go to jail before paying a fine for the seatbelt. Now, it's been going almost 2 years. I finally got a decision on my motions to dismiss, and it was denied without comment. It seems to me, Jim, an American citizen, the most fundamental right a person should have is to determine for himself, while being in his own vehicle, to determine for himself what is safe, what is not safe, or if he wants to, even if he thinks that seatbelts aren't as safe. That should be an American's right as an adult American citizen. I'd like to know your opinion on that and what you would do about the seatbelt laws in the state.
Well, I think that's an easy issue. I certainly understand your point, and I am generally in favor of letting people make decisions for themselves and letting them decide what level of risk they want to take. But clearly, seatbelts have saved lives in fairly large quantity, and there are other things that we do.
So you're saying you believe in paternal government?
Yeah,
that because in your opinion, and I can argue that seatbelts maybe save lives, but seatbelt laws do not, and I can prove that to you in a minute here. But let's get to this more fundamental point. It seems to me you just because you think that you've read the statistics and you say that seatbelts save lives, therefore, then we should have seatbelt laws. And why don't we have laws against bungee jumping and whitewater canoeing?
You know, although to your statement, I don't think you haven't spent much time listening to what I've said. You were trying to establish your own beliefs and put words in my mouth.
All right, go ahead.
All I'm saying is I think it's an issue that we need to look at. I haven't really said...
You said it was a simple issue. Now you're saying it's an issue that we have to look at.
I said it's not a simple issue.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misheard you. I'm sorry. I thought you said it's a simple issue. So when we start going in about the regular, about, well, the seatbelt saved lives, then...
Easy, Ken.
That was my producer. Okay. So you're saying, well, I guess, where's the problem, though? Where do you draw the line? Where the government steps in and tells people what they can and cannot do.
That's precisely what makes it so difficult.
I'm not sure. To me, it's not difficult at all. What's so difficult about it?
I don't have a magic answer. And by the way, that's not an issue. It would come up to a governor of Illinois. That would be a...
Well, I understand, but it's an issue for me, and it's an issue for a lot of people who think it's very important. And I'm sorry, it's my radio show, and I'd like to get a real honest answer. Because to me, this is a litmus test issue, whether or not you believe in limited government or big government.
Yeah, why don't we talk about issues that would affect the state of Illinois and that a governor would have some input on?
I think the governor could have a big input on it. Let me make one more comment to you, Jim, about seatbelt laws. Since 1986, when all these seatbelt laws were implemented, there's one state that has not implemented a seatbelt law, and that's the state of New Hampshire. And you know what? They came from, in 1986, 25th ranking of safety of the 50 states. Now they're fifth highest in safety. So actually, they've come better by 20 states without seatbelt laws.
Ken, should states be allowed to set a maximum speed limit on highways?
I think states should, under their jurisdictions, determine whatever laws they want, and including medical marijuana.
Yes or no, should states be allowed to set speed laws?
If it's a federally funded highway, it seems to me, then the feds might have some control over that.
My point is, you've just said that speed laws make some sense under some circumstances. Therefore,
that's different. We're talking here, Jim, talking about different people's lives. We're talking about affecting others' lives. When I'm talking about medical marijuana and when I'm talking about seatbelt laws, I'm talking about just the individual.
That's not necessarily true.
Well, how is it not true?
Seatbelts can affect many different things. It's very possible that if you had a seatbelt, then... it's conceivable that it might prevent you from hurting somebody else in an accident.
Oh.
So
I don't believe that. I don't believe, especially considering the fact that if you understand anything about economics and incentives, then you might know that.
You know what? I've started three mutual funds. I've started two stock brokerage firms, and I've started a money management company that runs over $1 billion today. To even imply or think that I don't understand, and I have an MBA from the University of Chicago.
You should understand incentives and disincentives, and the fact that if somebody is not wearing a seatbelt, they're more likely to not get into an accident. If they are wearing a seatbelt, they're going to have this semblance of safety, and on the margin may drive a little less safe. You cannot say that seatbelts save lives. It's not conclusive at all. And the statistics that the National Transportation, the bureaucrats in the federal government give out when they say that seatbelts save lives is a straight-line, bad science a study. Because what they do is they take it from time A to time B, and they say, or from time A to time B, so many lives were saved with the seatbelt law. What they don't tell you is that if you look at safety over time since the inception of the automobile, there has been a straight line increase in safety, and that seatbelts have not affected that straight line. It's bad science. You're getting fed bad science about this thing about seatbelt saving lives, Jim. Is he gone?
No, I'm here, Ken. Okay. I don't know if you really want to explore issues or if you
I
just
do
want to
explore
go
issues.
And,
I just want to get to the personal rights issues first because I think they're important. And even if others don't think of it as a maybe just a small little radio community leader, I think it's very important that we press these personal issues. We'll get to your other issues. We started with your issues about corruption, and so I gave you your issue first, and then I got my issue of personal rights. And I think it's very important. And to be honest with you, Yes, as a libertarian, I am very strong and fundamental in the support of individual rights, and Republicans so many times talk a good game, and when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, they don't produce. And I would like to see production. Anybody Republican running for governor to stand up for medical marijuana, to stand up for rights to wear or not wear a seatbelt. It's very important to me, and some other folks, too. But we'll get to other issues. I guess you don't want to comment any more on that. All right, this is Freedom Rings. We're talking with Republican candidate for governor, Jim Oberweis. Phone number here is 847-931-1410. Have any comments, questions, observations, give us a call. We will be back after a few messages.
We reduce children to their lowest common denominator.
57% of us are functionally illiterate.
For us, excellence is a thing of the past.
We killed the teachers and students at Columbine.
We are all trained to follow orders. Good.
We have learned to be tolerant of all people, except whites, Christians, and males.
27% of us are put on drugs.
The rest of us take the illegal ones. Two-thirds of us believe that from each according to his ability to each according to his need is part of the preamble to the U.S. Constitution.
7 out of 10 of us don't know either of the senators in our state.
We just placed 19th out of 21 countries on math scores, ahead of the Ivory Coast and Sri Lanka.
We elected Bill Clinton as president.
And re-elected him.
And 9 out of 10 of us are products of the public schools.
This message paid for by the Illinois Indoctrinators Association.
Ever think that you should be getting more out of your computer? Maybe you need a go-to tech guy. A go-to tech guy is somebody who knows computers inside and out and can help you with yours. John Spazieri is a real go-to tech guy. John Spazieri is a 20-year tech veteran who can help you get more out of your computer. Need software installed and configured? Call John. Want to learn word processing or Excel spreadsheets? Call John. John Spazieri comes to your home, works with you one-on-one on your machine, and shows you step-by-step how to do things you've always wanted to do with your computer. Want to upgrade your computer? Call John. Need to build a wireless network? Call John. Call John Spazieri at area code 630-858-6933. That's 630-858-6933. John Spazieri. Make him your go-to tech guy. I consider trial by jury as the only anchor yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its constitution. So said Thomas Jefferson. What does this mean? Nothing less than that a juror has more power in a particular case than a judge, congressman, or president, and can judge the law. A juror has the right and power to nullify unjust law by voting not guilty, contrary to the jury instructions that many judges routinely give that jurors must apply the law as given by the judge. This is a very important check on the power of oppressive government. In the past, jury nullification has asserted its historical importance concerning fugitive slave laws of the 1850s, prohibition in the 1920s, and draft cases in the 1960s. Oppressive gun laws, tax laws, and drug laws are other instances where the people through a jury said no to government. For more information, call the Illinois Fully Informed Jury Association at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974.
Okay, we are back with Freedom Ring. The phone number here is 847-931-1410. If you have a comment, question, observation for Jim Oberweis, Republican running for governor, give us a call. Let's go right to the phones. We have John. Hello, John.
Hi, Ken. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
I have a couple of issues. During the next gubernatorial term, there's a possibility for a state constitutional convention to be called. I was wondering if you thought that the state constitution needs rewriting.
I believe the last time was, what, about 30 years ago or so?
1970.
35 years ago, my time flies. Huh? John, I don't have a good solid opinion on that. I would want more information as to what issues are out there and what needs to be reviewed, but I'm certainly not opposed to it.
Okay. And then a number of states, primarily Western states, have passed bills into law limiting local government's ability to use eminent domain to for redevelopment of various areas of their communities.
Yes.
And we're involved with the Lake Zurich eminent domain abuse, and we're well aware of the Chicago eminent domain abuse that is happening right now. Would you be in favor of such a bill?
Yes, I need obviously to know exactly the terms we're talking about before I can comment on specific legislation, but certainly in principle, that would make a lot of sense.
So in principle, Mr. Overreich, would you agree that if a municipality uses the force of eminent domain for, would you say, for any private use that's not like a school or a road or a church, a school or a road, let's say, or a municipality building, if it's for development like a condominium. Can you think of any case where you would be in favor of use of eminent domain to build private condominium?
No, I'm totally out of hand.
Okay, cool. All right, anything else, John?
Yes. Over the last 7 years, the state has used layoffs and early retirement programs to reduce the state's number of state employees significantly, and yet we're still broke, which business-wise, that's generally what a business does to meet the bottom line. And the state doesn't seem to be able to do that. They continually get rid of experienced employees, and then under the Blagojevich in particular, hire contractors for more
precisely
than what the state employees were getting.
And by the way, those contractors, generally speaking, are people who have made large campaign contributions to the Blagojevich administration.
Mm-hmm.
That makes no sense whatsoever, obviously. And I think it's become blatant. I think it's wrong. And I think there are good chances we'll find some things to be illegal in there.
So what the legislature and the previous governors have done is just get rid of state employees to increase the budget.
And to increase their control over where the contracts are going and to reward those who've made large campaign contributions.
And you want to stop that, or?
Absolutely. That's why I pledged I want to accept campaign contributions from those that have service contracts for the state of Illinois. It makes no sense to allow that to continue and grow. And Illinois has become, unfortunately, one of the worst states for that type of corruption in the country.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, let's move on. We have Jeff on the line. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning, guys. How are you guys today?
All right.
Good morning.
Hey, Jim, I respect you. You're just, I'm glad you're running for governor.
Thank you.
You know, I called you once before a while back, but I was wondering, just tax, I've got a tax problem. I want to say a tax, but everybody's got a tax problem around here. Plus, the way the businesses are going out of town. My issue is more not so much nationally as it is locally, you know, throughout the state. The gentleman brought something up just a minute ago about the amount of people that are working for the state versus how much, you know, why they're always broke and all this money problems. That's one issue. The other thing is school taxes. School, the way we're taxing each other, and I heard you guys briefly talking about it earlier, we got to do something about these property taxes because it's forcing my family out of their house. I built this house, and it was cheap 3 years ago. And cheap isn't cheap, and it goes from 25% to 50% every year.
Yep.
I mean, it's astronomical, especially in the town I live in and the county I live in. And it shouldn't happen like that. And there's an article in the Daily Herald today. There's a gentleman who's saying the same thing. It's happening nationwide, and it's on the front page. And I agree with it 100%. He's just saying what it is. It's just like the school would rather tax us to death than deal with the problems overhead. I know it's going to be hard as a governor to do some of this stuff, but I think there's people get way too much money. Where's the money going, basically, I guess what I'm saying? I'm trying to follow the money, and every time I try to find where it goes, it's not going to kids. It's going for infrastructure.
Right.
It's going for paying for board members and you know, teacher salary, which the teacher salary is fine, but the bottom line, they always say it goes to the kids, and it doesn't. It doesn't go for new books. It doesn't go for new computers, you know, things like that.
I'm
fed up with it. You know, there's got to be another way. You know, and I see all these freebies we're giving to other countries. I don't know. I kind of disagree with some of the stuff that Ken says, but, you know, respectfully, of course, but I just, you know, I'm in this town, and I'm trying to stay in this town, but I'm being forced out. And I'm a nice guy. I'm paying my taxes. I'm not fighting about it. I'm not barking about it like everybody else is. But what's fair is fair. I feel like I'm living in Naperville, and I live in Geneva.
You're exactly right.
There's no comparison,
you know. When you say for the kids, you should hear in that tax increase. This has all become code words for increasing property taxes. It's not for the kids. It's for the bureaucrats. I think there are two things we need to do. Move towards school choice, which will help to control that situation, and move towards merit pay for teachers. You know, in most businesses, we pay those who do a good job more. We give them bonuses. Those who do a bad job don't get bonuses and maybe eventually lose their job if it continues. We need precisely the same thing in education. And by the way, I started my career after graduating from the University of Illinois as a teacher at Waldo Junior High in Aurora for math and science. So I have a background. I understand a little bit about that. But I think it's critical that we provide an opportunity for teachers who are really good teachers to earn more money, to earn larger bonuses, but not to automatically reward those who don't do a good job. And there is no academic evidence whatsoever that I'm aware of that says that somebody who's taught for 30 years is necessarily a better teacher than somebody who's taught for 5 years. So we need to give principals that ability to give bonuses to teachers, and then we need to hold the principals accountable so that if they're not doing well with their school, they don't get a bonus. If they are doing well, they do get a bonus. And if they don't do well for a period of time, they have a chance to lose their job. This whole idea of tenure for grade school and high school teachers is absolutely, precisely the wrong thing to do. We need to provide them with bonuses. We need to get responsive results. And I think that can be accomplished, but it'll be very hard to accomplish.
What about these teacher pensions, Jim? My understanding is the average teacher retiring has a present value of their annuity of over $1 million.
Yes, it's become unbelievable. And the way the scam, and I'll call it that, it's a little bit of an exaggeration, but not much, works, is this. Teachers' pensions are paid by the state of Illinois rather than by the school district. So the school district has a tendency to give big increases to teachers the last year or two that they work because the pension is based on teacher salaries. In effect, the school district is shifting the cost of that compensation to the state from the school district. And that's obviously unfair because there's no incentive to want to hold it down.
Right.
They want to load it up so
right.
that the state is stuck for that obligation. What is the state doing? Well, Illinois has been one of the most, perhaps the most underfunded state pension of all 50 states up until now. But now, instead of trying to catch up and do better, we've actually, through this most recent budget, have postponed making any payments into the state system in order to try to balance our current budget. It's
Wouldn't private corporate executives be thrown in jail for
Absolutely.
Some of this stuff?
Absolutely. It's really not much different than what was going on at Enron or many other companies. And, you know, we've already seen what United Airlines was able to do with their pension system, that is to declare bankruptcy and shift those obligations to the federal government. Unfortunately, we don't want the state of Illinois to declare bankruptcy. So we are going to have to, our children are going to have to make those payments later on. And if we're deferring $2.3 billion in those payments now, which would be in there for the next 25 or 30 years, earning 7, 8, 9, 10% returns over that period of time, instead of that, our children are going to have to pay 20 or 25 or 30 billion dollars to make up for those.
It's my hope that future generations will read the Declaration of Independence very carefully and closely and scrutinizingly, what Thomas Jefferson said, that when there's sufferable things, you know, we'll suffer them, but when things become absolute despotism, and I suggest these onerous tax future tax payments that our children and grandchildren are going to have to burden themselves with, if we're going to pay for all these things, it's going to be absolute despotism, and maybe something else will happen, Jim.
Well, then basically what you're saying is we're not going to make those pension payments to our state employees, and that, of course, isn't fair either. So what we need to do is to have reform today.
Absolutely.
So that we do not continue to abuse the system and provide those types of future benefits for future hires of the state of Illinois, whether they're teachers or other employees, and we need to take that action now. We need somebody strong enough to stand up and say, this is crazy, and we've got to stop. And that's obviously not what our legislature and our governor are doing today.
Very good. Jeff, thanks for your call. We're going to take one more quick call from the cell phone and then go to messages.
Good morning, Ken. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
I know we've talked about a lot of subjects, and some of it, you know, deal with corruption like Enron and Global Crossing and all that. But, you know, we have guys that are standing up and fighting a system like that. And a guy named Joe, out in California, certified public accountant, went to work for an agency, was there for a long time, you know, high marks, good grades, doing a great job, noticed some inconsistencies and differences. So Joe, on his own time, spent about a year doing some investigation and research on the material. So he'd go to his boss and say, hey, you know, there's inconsistencies here, things that are not right. And I would like you to respond and clear this up so I can do my job in good conscience and know I'm doing the right thing here because, you know, I want to comply with the law and do everything correctly. Well, Joe was told by his boss that, you know, you have a 7-day suspension, and at the end of that, if you still want to work here, you forget about these questions and we'll let you go back to work. Otherwise, clean out your desk. So Joe, being a moral man, you know, Christian upbringing and all that good stuff, you know, fathers, families in law enforcement, said he could not stomach it. So Joe resigned from his job, cleaned out his desk, and you know who his employer was?
No.
No, his employer was the Internal Revenue Service. Joe Bannister is a certified public accountant, a former special agent with the Internal Revenue Service that had questions about the tax code, and when he went to his employer to get clarification, they fired him. And I think starting tomorrow, Mr. Bansky is going to be on trial in California for a whole slew of charges.
We got to shorten this up, buddy. Any comments on this, Jim?
Well, I'm not sure what the question is. What's the question?
Well, the Illinois tax code is based entirely on the federal tax code. The federal tax code is based on fraud and deception. And the Illinois Department of Revenue has a problem that pushes the tax laws because they don't exist. And you can find out more. Just look up Joe Bannister on the Internet, and it'll show you all kinds of articles, or Bernice Kugeln, who has already beaten the IRS in a tax case. I mean, it's out there if you just want to look, but I don't know if anybody wants to look at it.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, it proves that there's fraud with the federal tax code. What are you going to do as governor to correct the problem here in the state of Illinois?
Well, first of all, we're going to continue to have a tax code. Hopefully it can change, because I think that our current tax code is absolutely ridiculous. The amount of money that's spent by taxpayers in trying to determine what their tax liability is insane. We all spend hours and hours and hours every year that it could be made much simpler. So we'll have a tax code going forward one way or the other. The simplest thing for a state, if it's going to have a state income tax, would say that, okay, it's going to be X percentage of the federal liability and make no changes. I mean, that would save a lot of time for everybody.
Okay, we got to run. This is Freedom Rings. We'll be back after a few messages.
Hello, friends. This is Kenneth John, and Freedom Rings needs your help. I would like to get back to a two-hour show, but that costs money. You can help by contributing to the Heartland Institute, Illinois' own libertarian think tank, with a tax-deductible contribution. The Heartland Institute is an independent, nonprofit research organization in operation for 17 years. Joseph Bass, Heartland's president, is a frequent guest on this program. 90% of what you contribute to Heartland comes back to Freedom Rings to pay for this ad. By contributing $25 or more, you will receive monthly publications including School Reform News,
environment, and climate news, and the Heartlander, the Heartland Institute's monthly newsletter. So please call 312-377-4000 to contribute, and be sure to mention Freedom Ring. That's 312-377-4000. Or you can contribute by credit card on the internet by going to Heartland's website at heartland.org. Again, remember to mention Freedom Ring, and thank you for your support.
Are you politically homeless? Are you tired of being taxed and regulated by the Democrats and regulated and taxed by the Republicans? Would you like to pursue your own dreams without the interference of government? Well then, America's most successful upcoming party, the Libertarian Party, is your political home. The Fox Valley Libertarian Party is your local libertarian group working hard to restore the freedoms our country once held dear. Yes, you can fight City Hall and win. We did. Find out how. With your help, we will make the 21st century the century of liberty for all. We hold monthly meetings at Baroni's Pizza, 3 Lakewood Plaza, one block west of Route 25 off of Bessinger Drive in Carpentersville on the last Wednesday of every month at 7 o'clock p.m. Call 847-426-1974 for more information. That's 847-426-1974. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty.
Okay, we are back with Freedom Rings. We were talking with Jim Oberweis, candidate for governor of Liberty. excuse me.
If you wish.
Yeah. The Republican Party. Any other issues we didn't hit on that you wanted to talk about, Jim, real quick?
Yes, actually, the caller was asking about some of the costs from the bureaucrats for the school system. There's a lot of information available on the web. There's a site, I believe it's the champion.org.
Champion.org, yep.
Yes, or you can also get there, I think, through renewillinois.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that will give you the salaries and the compensation of all the teachers in Illinois and the bureaucrats and administrators, and some of them have gotten absolutely very substantial, and it's worth taking a look at. I think it's very eye-opening to look at your own school district.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
And I'd also love to have our listeners go to oberweisforillinois.com to learn more about our campaign, O-B-E-R-W-E-I-S for Illinois.com.
Okay, any phone number you want to give out?
Sure, our campaign phone number is 630-801-5370.
Okay, my producer has a question for you.
Yeah, just real quick here, and I know this is just something that personally relates to me, Jim, and I just wanted your thoughts on it. It's not necessarily a state issue, but kind of a national issue. What is your stand on Social Security? Because me being 36 years old, kind of getting iffy whether I'm ever going to see Social Security, and since I've been paying in it my entire adult life,
sure.
I'm just kind of curious where you stand on that.
Well, I think we have a very serious problem, and I think it needs to be addressed now one way or the other. It's clear that it is hugely underfunded, similar to Illinois' pension plan, and either we're going to have to not make payments to our future retirees like you when you reach your retirement age, or we're going to have to make payments at a lower level, or we're going to have to increase the amount that we take by a significant amount from our workers, or we need to change the structure of the system, perhaps through privatization. I actually published a fairly thorough analysis and suggestions about 4 years ago, which suggested a partial privatization in the sense that we would allow investors or savers to save a part of their Social Security contribution. At the time, I was talking about 3.1% or half of the individual contribution to go into an IRA
We got to close, Jim. Thank you very much for being on the show today. I appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Thanks,
right.
Jim.
You bet.
This is from Ronald Reagan. Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction.
Fire communication.
When bad